Your daily dose of sports talk is here. Highlights, interviews, and analysis. From the entertainment capital of the world, Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
And we welcome you to it this Friday edition of the show. Lots to do over the next 60 minutes. A little bit of the best of the week combined with the news of the day. Brian Twining will join us to talk NASCAR and preview one of the crown jewel races for the NASCAR season, the Brickyard 400. We'll have some odds and ends, some baseball conversation with our friend David Ardsma. But we're breaking format today because there is breaking news, or as we like to call it on this show, broken news. And it's broken because LeBron James has signed with the Philadelphia 76ers, a two-year deal, $8 million. There's a player option in there. Shem Charania was the first to report it, so credit to him. He got it from Rich Paul over at Clutch Sports. So we bring in our friend, the great Kurt Heelen at Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. Does a great job over there. Joins us every Wednesday on the show when we go inside the NBA. All right. I mean, what do you make of it? By the way, my understanding is you got the news second, right after, right after Shams.
Right after Shams tweeted it, yeah.
What is your reaction to LeBron signing in Philadelphia?
A little bit surprised. I thought he would choose comfort and narrative a little bit, going back to Miami, going back to Cleveland if he wanted to be out east, over what he had said, frankly, which was winning was the most important thing. And he talked about family and he talked about all this other stuff. But at the end of the day, he really wanted one more run. And if it was going to be a basketball decision, this was the best call. You get out, you get to the East where, look, I think the East might be actually a little deeper than the West this year, but you don't have two juggernauts at the top that, like, I'm not sure how you get past. In the East, this Philadelphia team now joins the Knicks as your preseason favorites to come out, right? Their starting five is Tyrese Maxey, VJ Edgecombe, Jaylen Brown, LeBron James, and Joel Embiid. And Embiid's knees become the question, right? Like, that's the thing that will ultimately hold them up. But if they can keep it easy enough on him and get him through the season and get enough from Hecporti and Bona and everybody that's behind him to just get through, this thing works. Like, this is a really good team in Philly right now, and it's a heck of an offseason for the 76ers, man.
One of the greatest offseasons ever, I mean, if you really think about it. And look, I mean, I think about it in the same context you do. We had talked about all the narrative was going home, the documentary. It's about, you know, the greatest, you know, sort of finish possible, full circle. Even Miami had a little bit of that because he could have gone back there. This is about winning a championship. And the fact that he's signing a two-year deal, and I don't know if there's anything to discern from that. Is there something to discern that maybe this isn't the final season?
That conversation was always going to be the next one, which was he's kind of said, I'm taking it year by year. I think genuinely it does come to how this year plays out, both how it plays out on the court and the chemistry there, and also how does he feel at the end of this. At some point, yeah, look, he's played less games every year. I think he played 60 last year. I don't want to say he's not going to get to 65, but he's probably not going to get to 65. He's limited a little bit in what he can do, and he can't take over a game or a series like he used to, but he can take over a quarter or a half, and he can be showed against Houston with the Lakers. He can win a series for them.
Kurt, so with that
they become huge.
But Kurt, with that starting five, they can rotate guys in and out of the lineup and take nights off in ways that other teams are not going to be able to do.
They actually have nice depth. The center thing is a concern, and that may be something they have to address. But they, remember, got Dean Wade out of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Defensive guy, space to floor. He was good. He was probably the starting four yesterday, right? Like, he was probably the... Now... He moves to the bench where you've got a pretty good bench coming in for them. Like, they do have depth now. That's a team. I think the advantage for LeBron there is, and Embiid, is that they're going to be able to win a lot of games with Maxey and Brown and not have to push those guys. Like, you're going to be able to get LeBron and get Embiid to the playoffs in the best possible spot. And frankly, depending on the matchups, maybe cruise through the first round a little bit before you really have to get to playing those guys every other day in a series, and that becomes tougher for them at that age.
If there's a reason it doesn't work, what is it? Can you find one?
It looks great on paper, but how many teams have we seen look good on paper? Like, we still need to see what this thing looks like. But the biggest thing that undoes this is pretty simple. It's Joel Embiid's knees. If Joel Embiid, they showed in the playoffs against Boston last year, this is a good team.
Kurt, I just put him on ice for most of the season. Yep. Keep him healthy and just have him for the playoffs. Doesn't that have to be the strategy?
Yeah, look, he played 40 games last year. I don't know if that's the target for this year, but I imagine it's pretty close to that. Like, and you can really now limit his minutes. Again, you're going to get enough wins that it's going to be comfortable for you. It's going to be a little different because there aren't 9 teams tanking. Everybody's win totals, by the way, when you're betting this, everybody's win totals are going to be a little lower than you think they are, because there's no 15 games you just get handed to you this year.
Yeah. Philadelphia, by the way, now the fourth best odds to win it all. Oklahoma City at plus 260, the Spurs at plus 270. Then there's a huge drop down to the Knicks at 9-1 and Philadelphia at 10-1.
That's about where I would have them in my power rankings. I'd have the Knicks on top to start the year on the power rankings because, you know, they're the champs. But like those, I think when I put together my power rankings for the summer a few weeks ago, before this even happened, I had those as the top four and the four I saw as true title contenders. So look, there's a lot of other teams that if this goes right and that goes right, then yes. But I don't know if we're there yet.
By the way, Governor Josh Shapiro has already put out a tweet 41 minutes after the signing that says, "By the power vested in me as the governor of the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and a diehard Sixers fan, I hereby proclaim today to be LeBron James Day. Welcome to the city of brotherly love, King James." So it didn't even take long for the governor to get involved.
I think that's perfect because, like all the Sixers players, he's going to live in New Jersey, I think. So that'll be great.
Commute in from New York. He could do that as well. We were waiting for this day. It has arrived. LeBron to Philadelphia. We'll have more reaction on the show next week. Of course, on the weekend version of Sports Wrap as well. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, man.
The show, wild show. We didn't know LeBron was going to sign today. If you're just tuning in, or if you've been living under a rock all day, the breaking news: LeBron James deciding to sign with the Philadelphia 76ers. It's a 2-year deal worth $8 million. Yes, arguably the best player in the history of the NBA, if not the second best. 2 years, $8 million. And he's still a top 20 player in the league now. He undoubtedly makes the 76ers a title contender, as Kurt Heelan and I discussed to lead off the show. We broke format today because of the breaking news. Brought in Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. If you missed that conversation, head over to the YouTube channel. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page YouTube channel has the entire conversation and then some, because we actually went beyond the 8 minutes that we have for each segment of the show. So if you missed the conversation with Kurt Heelan on the TV side, or even if you saw it, there was more to it, it's on the YouTube channel. Go and subscribe to the Sports Wrap with Jason Page YouTube channel today. LeBron James, and we didn't get to this in the last segment, put out a post on social media, and we want to give it to you. Part of it's on the screen that's not supposed to be. There it is. So this was LeBron James, what he posted in announcing the decision, which he didn't do on TV this time. "I thought I was done when the season ended. I wasn't ready to announce it, and I knew I needed some time to really decide, but I was pretty sure I played my last game. I was honest at that last press conference when I said I needed to look at myself and decide if I still love this game. I still truly love this game, and I have more to give. The last few weeks have been really special. I've never been able to have no clue what to do and take real time to just think. I've had an incredible few months with all the people I love trying to figure it all out. This is my last decision. I'm not going for money. I'm not going for family. What am I really playing for at this point, he says. I still want to sacrifice. I still want to work. I still want to grind. I still want to compete to win and to have a chance at the feeling of winning another championship. So he's telling you right there. It's about getting another ring. All right, more on that on our YouTube channel. Also, Sports Wrap Shorts. You can check those out as well. But let's talk some baseball. David Ardsma, former big league reliever and closer, joined us on Sports Wrap this week. We talked all things baseball, including the red-hot Red Sox, who wound up winning 15 in a row before their winning streak was snapped. David and I talking about what we thought of them in the past and what we think of them now.
Well, I sat here on the show and said, sell everybody. Sell the whole franchise. Get rid of every single player. Yep. And I have to change that because you played in a manner that has shown that you don't need to trade everybody. But that's what has to happen, guys. This is those type of things we talk about.
You still think they should sell?
No, I'm saying is to change the whole sell mindset. It's not win five baseball games. And they're still just, they're three games above 500. So it wasn't like win five baseball games. You have to win 10. You have to win 14 in a row. You have to do something so absurdly good like this to show front offices that you're no longer a sell, you're a buy. They are a buy. They should be a buy without a doubt. I have 100% flipped it, but at the same time, they've won 14 games in a row. They have done everything that they have to do to prove to fans, to prove to front office that they are a buy. There's so many other teams that are middle, win a couple, lose a couple, win four. Oh my God, they're buyers. No, they're not. They haven't done anything. then they go lose a series. So this is incredible what they've done. Best pitching staff in baseball during this time period. They're absolutely killing it. They have the number one reliever ERA in all baseball regardless.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that's on Aroldis Chapman's shoulders. He's been amazing. They're still incredibly average hitting-wise over the course of the year. They're on a strong run. But they definitely still need more on the hitting side to separate themselves. They're still 28th in home runs, 20th in OPS, 23rd in runs scored. They are pitching just beyond light years what I was expecting them, especially that rotation. They're pitching incredible. They still need some bats. You know, we knew that going into the season. They're winning baseball games based on the pitching right now and enough hitting. They need hitting, and if they don't go out there and make a big splash on hitting, this is going to catch up at some point.
If our friend Sam Yarnell were here, he'd already know the answer to this because he'd go and do the research to find what was the longest winning streak David Ardsma was ever a part of. So I ask you, were you ever a part of anything like this?
So I did do the research. I did do the research. When I was on the Boston Red Sox, I was on a run, I had it right here, of 8 or 9 game winning streak, and 8, I believe, with the Mariners. So some really good runs. The Boston Red Sox team I was on was an incredible team. Like I felt like every day we showed up to the ballpark, we were going to whoop somebody's butt, except for the Tampa Bay Rays for some reason. That was the only team. We were 50-50 all year, 500 against each other. But I've never been on a run like this. Even when I was on that Red Sox team, it just felt like every day. It just felt like a normal game. You don't even realize you're winning 9 in a row because we're going to whoop your butt no matter what. And even if we lose, we're going to whoop it tomorrow.
What's the environment like? What's the locker room environment like during those runs?
Oh, fiesta. Man, it is fun. It's a good time. You walk in, music's playing. You just feel it, but it just feels like you're on top of the earth. You can't be beat. The key is really good leadership on those teams. That is the key because that can get into a groove where then you get complacent, and then pretty soon, then that turns into 4 in a row where you lose, 5 in a row where you lose. Great leadership on teams like this. Just keep working every day, have fun with the win, keep working, and then that thing starts rolling. Because you're going to come out of this at some point, you're going to lose a game. And then you're going to lose probably 2 in a row or something like that. That's fine. That happens. But it's how do you keep that train rolling, which is during those win streaks, you win. In college, I was on a win streak of 30 games. That was my biggest one, 30 or 31 in college. Wow. And we were like one game away from the national record. And that was the biggest thing. And there was, without a doubt, we got complacent. We got a little at the end of that streak. I did personally, and a lot of our guys did. And then our next 10 games, we lost like three or four games, and which is a huge deal in college. You lose that many. So then we turned it around and started whooping butt again.
That's great. David Ardsma is hanging out with us. I want to talk to him about Jacob Mizorowski, what's going on with the Tarek Skubal trade talks, as we're just a couple of weeks from the Major League Baseball trade deadline. I want to get into him with that. I've also got to find out when Major League Baseball players stopped wearing cups, because now we've seen a couple of instances with Jazz Chisholm, this poor kid from the A's who had to have surgery. Oh, we're going to talk about it. All of that coming up as Sports Wrap goes Inside Baseball. Wednesdays on Sports Wrap are all about baseball with David Ardsma as we go inside baseball. Kurt Heelen later on in the show. A shorter version of our NBA weekly with him, just to get us caught up on what's going on with LeBron. So, what were your thoughts when you saw Jacob Mizorowski only throwing four innings and like 65 pitches against the Mets? And the explanation that came with it from Pat Murphy, because I had Bob Nightingale on the show last week, and he claimed, and he lives out near you, you two should go have coffee. So Bob Nightingale had claimed that this was all planned, having him not start the game before the All-Star break, not pitching in the All-Star game, that all of this was part of a plan, that there's really nothing to worry about. And now you hear Pat Murphy talking about, oh, they're going to ramp him back up. He's only throwing this many pitches. I'm not buying, as much as I love Bob Nightingale, I'm not buying it. It still doesn't add up to me. Unless they're just being really cautious because he's already going to, you know, he's going to far exceed any number of innings he's ever pitched in a season. What were your thoughts when you heard how Pat Murphy was breaking this down, David?
I don't like how Pat Murphy said he wasn't recovering the way we want him to recover. Right. That's an interesting thing to me. It does light a little conspiracy theory bulb above my head when they, you know, now that he missed the All-Star game too, right? So that's extra innings, extra ramp up. You have to plan for that sort of stuff. You know, one way to do that is to have him start the last game right before the All-Star break, and then you don't have to come up with any sort of excuse, right, or anything like that. So I don't know if I'm buying it on that side. I just also don't like, because when he talked about this start and then he's talking about after the game, hey, like I still wasn't in my legs. It still wasn't quite feeling right. Unless he's really selling it to the media. But you don't want to be telling anybody of your fan base or anything saying, hey, my arm, my body's not recovering. My legs aren't into it. All those sort of things. You know, that's what I don't like. You don't talk like that unless it's real, because then if something does happen down the line, then you're going to look right back and say, well, why did you start him then? Why did you go about this road? And then you're going to have a whole lot of questions that you don't have answers to that you're not going to like, and Pat Murphy's not going to like, and that's how people lose jobs, even though I don't think he's going to lose his job. I thought he looked great. They talked about him not having great command after the first inning. Yeah, it's amazing what the fine line is for Jacob Mizorowski versus, I'd be very happy with it. Throwing 104 miles an hour to Juan Soto, basically the entire bat. That seems pretty okay to me. First pitch at 102, 103 miles an hour. He seems to be back. You're going to not feel in your legs after all-star breaks. I 100% have always felt that. Even that three-day break just messes with you. Everything's off. Your whole routine's off. So you're never the same that first outing, and then you get back into it. So that's what's going to be big for me is this next outing. He threw on Monday, where we're going to be at on Saturday or wherever he's going to throw next. I don't think there's too much concern here, but I don't think this is planned. There's a lot of other ways to handle this and a lot of ways to communicate this, saying, hey, we have a plan all year on where we're going to start and we're going to limit innings. That makes people feel warm and fuzzy inside. You're a Brewers fan. You want to feel warm and fuzzy. You want to feel that, oh, you got a blanket. They know what they're doing. You don't do that by saying, hey, he doesn't feel good. We're going to hold him back. That doesn't make you feel warm and fuzzy.
Instead of getting to Scooble along the lines of hard throwers, there was this story out of the Texas Rangers organization. One of their draft picks, somebody drafted in the first four or five rounds, I believe. Brody Bermilia, I believe is his name. I think he's like 18 years old, already hitting 100 on the gun.
6'9", 255, by the way.
How are you in high school, 6'9"? Well, I guess basketball players are all the time. So you've got this kid, and he's not even going to make it into professional baseball before he has to have Tommy John surgery. And I take this and I dovetail it off the conversation about Jacob Mizorowski, and I ask you, is this just the norm now and the sort of the price of doing business? And if you're the Rangers, you knew this was coming. He told teams this was coming, that you're still all in on guys like this?
So he had a huge signing bonus. He was supposed to be a top 10 pick until the arm problems. This is a pitching coordinator's draft, coordinator's dream. This is the dream that you have a guy like this. Because if he comes out of it, it's a third rounder. Oh my God. Like, this guy is a first rounder that you got in the third round. That's that type of thing in NFL where you're like, dude, if this guy's knee figures out, he's a top two pick. And you're like, third round, let's roll. The problem is he had an internal brace, and that still didn't really fully recover. So now he has to have the Tommy John. I'm not too concerned about it. I love the pick. I love the spot with him. Now, what does raise the real question is drafting guys that are injured. There's been a long history of it. Walker Buehler, Lucas Giolito, to name the ones that have kind of like survived through this. Even a Nathan Eovaldi had a Tommy John in 2007 before getting drafted in 2008. There's a long line of this stuff. Especially, I'm not really concerned on pitchers. As long as it's like a Tommy John, I'm not too concerned. It's just a matter of when that Tommy John was, when that happened. Like, is it 2 years before the draft? Mm-hmm. Then I'm a little bit more concerned. 3 years before the draft, I'm a little bit more concerned. Right before the draft, not as concerned, because now I've got 4 years, 5 years of this guy's arm no matter what. 3 years, and then like he probably didn't learn better mechanics, so he's going to blow out again, down the line. That's when it starts getting questionable. Shane McClanahan, I'll never forget this with when he got drafted by the Rays. I went and saw him. He had Tommy John in high school. I saw mechanics. I'm like, guys, this guy's amazing. He's going to blow out again. He was amazing, blew out again, and now he's coming. Now he's on the road back. You're only going to get a couple more years out of a double Tommy John guy. So like Walker Buehler, we got a couple great years. Then he had to have surgery again. What are you going to get after that? So it's like, that's the big concern. It's just a matter of how long am I going to actually get of his arm.
Didn't Ohtani have double Tommy John though?
Absolutely. This is still his first year coming back from it. And if he's successful, he's
so you're telling Dodgers fans he's only got a couple of years. That's it.
This is the only guy in the history of Major League Baseball that would be successful after a second Tommy John. He's having an incredible year. Let's see what this does in 5 years. But like, there's the roadmap on double Tommy John is an extremely small and windy road that we don't know where the end is.
David Ards was hanging out with us. I'm going to hold him. I'm going to bolt him to the chair because I got a couple more things I got to ask him about, including why players aren't wearing cups. What changed that caused this? It makes no sense to me. The Tarek Skubal trade talk as well as Sports Wrap continues. The one and only David Ardsma hanging out with us, former big league reliever and closer, Sirius XM MLB Radio. You can catch him there. He'll be doing the Little League World Series out in San Bernardino, the regional games. Looking forward to that. Who's doing those games with you? Do you know who your partner is?
I don't know who the partner is. There's a a group of us, I guess, because there's a lot of games. So there's a little group of us. I'm not sure who I'm going to be matched up with.
I just didn't know if they had told you yet. I'm just curious because they always have.
It's not Carl Ravitch.
No.
Oh, no. Man. That just is like.
I know. Yeah, I felt the same way. But, you know, with them getting out of the baseball business for the most part, it didn't shock me, as I discussed yesterday.
Banana ball.
Oh, don't. Let's not.
Fun
let's,
to watch.
Let's not. So I want to talk about Tarek Skubal here because, you know, there are still decisions to be made for the Tigers, who are 47-54 as we have this conversation. They are six games back on the loss side for that third wild card spot, which is held by Boston. The teams in front of them, Seattle, Baltimore, Minnesota, and Houston. We've got to be at a point here where they've got to pull the ripcord on this thing. Supposedly they want one top line pitcher and like big time prospects. There's talks about what they're asking for. The closer this gets to the deadline, it feels like they're going to get held over the barrel here. As far as teams saying, okay, we're not going to give you what you want. So either you're going to take a crappy deal or you're going to watch them walk in free agency.
Yeah. And that's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, if you wait, at the same time, it's still Tarek Skubal. So there's not going to be, it's not a type of market where one team's going to hold all the chips and then hold it against them. Every team's still going to want them, and every GM, every single GM and president is going to look at that and go, "Oh, we have to give up one guy. He's going to replace, and then we have to one prospect. Like, heck yeah, man, let's go. There's enough guys out there who jobs are on the line, including a Craig Breslow type of guy whose jobs are on the line right now that have to make these moves. And so I think there's still going to be enough to go get them. Again, I've wavered back and forth.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about like the things the Tigers had to do to prove to them that they're not sellers, are exactly what the Red Sox are doing, and they're not. Like they're 6-4 in their last 10. You play that out the rest of the season, they're still going to be losers. You know, and that's just the way it is. You're the best player on the market, best player in the world as far as a pitcher. I'm making a move right now before anything happens on an injury wise, anything. I start holding him back from starts and saying teams like, this is for you. I'm saving him for you. And you sell the heck out of it. No one needs to see what else he has to give. Just go sell him.
This is not for the squeamish. I will warn our audience, especially if you are of the male persuasion. This happened just a couple of days ago. A's rookie infielder Joshua Kuroda Grower at the plate, and this happens. Here it is. Taking one to the area. It is rare you see a foul ball directly that doesn't hit the ground first and then hit somebody in the nether regions. This one went directly, do not pass, go directly to jail. That's basically what happened here with this young man. And it was funny watching the broadcast because Dallas Braden's on the broadcast. He's always funny. Dallas Braden's out there and he's like, well, you know, rub some dirt on it. Get up, walk it off. Little did we know he ruptured a testicle. David Ardsma. I saw Jazz Chisholm take one to the nether regions. Find out he's not wearing a cup. Clearly this dude wasn't wearing a cup. Why aren't baseball players wearing cups anymore? What has changed?
So what's changed is, I don't know. I have no idea. I watched the same thing happen to Adrian Beltre, but he was wearing a cup and he ruptured a testicle. So I think a lot of times, I do know outfielders don't wear cups. There's no point for them to wear cups. A lot of times the middle infielders, because they are so far back, don't wear cups anymore. Third baseman tend to, catchers obviously kind of have to. I wore a cup one game in my entire major league career, and I pulled my groin that game because I was moving different. Never wore it again. And I 100% regret that decision, wearing a cup. I regret it up and down because it changed my entire career wearing that cup. And so I'm always 50-50 on this, on where guys should, what guys should do. We really don't see them. The reason you wear a cup is because you see him in the field getting hit a lot. I think a lot of times these fields are so manicured now, so perfect, that you're not seeing these bad bounces that are jumping up there and get guys the same way in the past. And they like,
yeah, but an errant throw, you could be a base runner in an errant throw and get hit. You could, we've seen enough of these foul balls now that you could get hit. Like, isn't there enough research out there that guys just, you know what? I want to be able to have my baby makers. You know, like come on.
I think what it is the one time we hear about it versus, like, the feeling of not wearing it. I was also in a position, the way I pitched and the way I finished and followed through, I wasn't going to get hit there. Like, I kind of, like,
yeah, the way
finished
you
in a different
over.
Way.
Yeah.
So I regret it, but I still don't know how some of these guys don't. But I also don't field like them. I couldn't field a ground ball in the big leagues.
Yeah. Well, let me just say this. Everybody who talks about baseball players not being tough, he stayed in the game, got a single later on in the game, Mr. Ardsma. I don't want to hear any talk about baseball players aren't tough. They just stand around. They're not tough guys, because this guy proved that theory wrong.
No, yeah. Well, the whole tough guy thing, the problem is we play a sport where the level of error is so minimal. Like, a hangnail can be the difference between being good and bad.
Yeah.
That's the difference. It's not that we're not tough.
Yeah.
It's just that we realize, like, you can't survive on some of these things in this game.
David Ardsma, Sports Wrap Inside Baseball. Always appreciate you, my friend. Stay safe.
Of course.
Welcome back to the show. We'll wrap it up with some odds and ends 10 minutes from now. Fridays and Mondays on Sports Wrap, we give you a preview of the NASCAR race for the week. Mondays, we give you the recap. We've made a lineup change. Ryan Twining is here. Yep.
Going to the bullpen.
We've called for the lefty or the righty. What are you?
Lefty. Lefty.
Calling for the lefty. Brian Twining will be joining us for the rest of the NASCAR season. I'm thrilled to announce Tino Patino, who many of you have known to, you know, come to enjoy on the show. Has really been with us for over 2 years doing this show every week during NASCAR season. We had some scheduling conflicts that just continued to arise. So we decided it was just best. He decided, that he wasn't going to do this on Fridays anymore. We still wish him all the best, and I'm sure he'll be on from time to time whenever anything big happens in NASCAR. So, Brian, you are in. Congratulations on the most underpaid spot in all of television. let's talk about first Joey Logano winning last week. Why are you shit? Why do I get the head shake? You act like you're... He wins it. That's like his home track practically with what he's done at North Wilkesboro. Why are you shaking your head?
It's just with the way that team had been running pretty much since the beginning of last year and the beginning of this season, I just didn't see a world where they were going to find that magic again. And I was proven wrong. You know, hats off to everybody that played Logano in the betting markets last week. You know, he cashed out a big ticket, and hats off to Logano. I mean, leading the most laps he ever has in a race to into victory lane was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it really was. And now he puts himself back in the playoff race. But do you see him staying there? Because when you talk about, you know, I think he's 15th now, something like that, in the playoff standings, 14th, 15th.
Chase.
Yeah, the chase. I know. Old habits die hard. So he's in, you know, he's right still on the cut line. Given how he's run the rest of the season and all the problems that team has had, do you get the sense that he will wind up in the chase, or was this just a blip on the radar?
Yeah, I always expected the 22 team to find their way into the chase at some point. And especially when you look at this string of races we have coming up. I mean, we go to Iowa, we go to Richmond, and then we go to Daytona one final time. So, I mean, those are all tracks that Logano should perform well at. So I fully expect him to make it. I don't expect him to make much noise during it, but he should be there.
All right, let's focus on Indianapolis. And, you know, look, last year this was a memorable race on the NASCAR calendar because Bubba Wallace won. And he was the first black driver to ever win, or maybe first in like a zillion years or something like that, to win in Indianapolis. It was a memorable race. It was an emotional race. Bubba Wallace hasn't won yet this year. Any chance we can have a redo of last year and he could win?
Let me just tell you, the early money from the community is definitely headed towards 23-11 as a team. Bubba Wallace, Tyler Reddick, and their fill-in guy, Corey Heim, is also receiving some interest in the betting markets this week for sure, just based on the speed they've shown this year in this package and both Reddick and Wallace's history, or two race history in the next gen era here at Indy.
Well, I mean, but can it be just that simple that, you know, you get to a track where you won last year and suddenly all the things that have held you back from winning this year, whatever those may be, and it's not like Bubba's run bad. He's in the chase right now. You know, he's had a nice season. He's almost been like Scottie Scheffler in golf where, yeah, he's not winning, but he's finishing top 10 all the time or top 15 all the time. You know, sort of that kind of season. Why is it then that so many people feel just because you get to a track where you've won before that everything else that's happened throughout the season, and maybe it's the Joey Logano effect, I don't know.
I was just going to reference the fact that Logano went out at a track where people kind of expected him to run well, and he did just that. And the same can be said for Bubba Wallace, who he's been good in this at Indianapolis, and in particular in this package this season where Toyota has a decided advantage on the field just in overall speed. So it's fully expected that they're going to show up with that type of pace again.
You look at the odds right now, Denny Hamlin at plus 360 over on FanDuel, Kyle Larson at plus 550, Tyler Reddick at plus 650. You mentioned 23-11 Racing, Christopher Bell at 7-1, Chase Briscoe at 9-1, Ryan Blaney at plus 950. You get down to 12-1. You could still get Bubba at 12-1, which seems like a fairly good price still for a guy that won here last year.
Yeah. And you know, he's as long as 14-1 at a couple of shops here in Las Vegas. And I don't necessarily hate playing that number. It's just hard to get there when Bubba was, I believe, 50-1 to win this race last year. As somebody that hit the ticket, like, I vividly remember being a rather large payout. So it's hard to come to this season and pay the price or pay the premium on him.
All right. Give me some other guys you like this weekend in the final minute we have here.
Yeah, when you look at the in-season tournament, Todd Gilliland versus Ryan Blaney, you know, this is receiving kind of the afterburner attention, but Gilliland's been great here at Indianapolis. Two top six finishes. He's beaten Blaney in one of the two races. I actually like his top 10, which was available as long as 8-1, because he wouldn't have to beat Blaney in that matchup. But I do think sprinkling both his top 10 and head-to-head against Blaney is a decent look.
Anybody else you like further down the trough, potentially surprises?
I think Daniel Suarez could poke his head in there. He's been fast in this package this year. And then Riley Herbst, you know, he's the kind of the forgotten man in the 23-11 camp. But when they show up fast, everybody in that camp shows up fast.
How about Carson Hocevar at 17-1?
Yeah, I mean, Hocevar is always going to be there. But I mean, in a race where strategy could come to play, I don't know. Again, you're paying a premium on a guy that's won at a super speedway only.
Brian Twining, Bleacher Nation. He does a terrific job covering NASCAR. Go check him out there. Thrilled to have you on. Great to have you for the rest of the season. Thank you, my friend.
Yes, thanks for inviting me, and I'm looking forward to it.
Just about time to put the wraps on this baby for another week. Some reminders before we go. Bear with me. Sports Wrap Weekends. Our Monday through Friday TV version of the show is an hour long. The weekend version is 30 minutes, available on many of these same affiliates. If not, check your local listing for time and schedule. We'll have the LeBron signing with Philadelphia covered in there. Part of my conversation with David Ardsma, former big league reliever and closer. And a fun debate that Sam and I had this week on teams that missed the NFL playoffs last year that we think could make the NFL playoffs this season. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast, the Monday through Friday TV version of the show in its audio form. You want to listen to us rather than having to watch? You might be in the car, in the shower, at the gym, on the treadmill, laying in bed, and whatever. You can listen to us, crystal clear audio, Monday through Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Odyssey, Amazon, you name it, we are on all of them. Go and check it out. Subscribe. We'd appreciate it. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page YouTube channel. This is why you have to be subscribed to our YouTube channel. We have everything there. The Monday through Friday TV version of the show, Sports Wrap Originals, The Big Story, extended conversations like the one we had today with Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. There's more to that conversation than what you just saw on this show. It's over there. Go and subscribe. It's free. Amazing content, Sports Wrap shorts. It's terrific. News breaks, we jump in on the YouTube channel because we obviously can't just jump into your TV and do it there. But you can watch us on TV on the YouTube channel. YouTube is great on television. The Sports Wrap website is live, sportswrap.tv. You want to go to sportswrap.tv for everything having to do with this show. The aforementioned TV show, the aforementioned podcast, The Daily Wrap, our Substack newsletter. You can go and subscribe to it right now on the Sports Wrap with Jason Page website, sportswrap.tv. It's above my head, so you can't forget it. You can't miss it. It's right there, sportswrap.tv. You could find your affiliate. Want to know where to watch the show? You can find out at sportswrap.tv. You want to send us a note. Say you love us. Say you hate us. Say you're watching. Say you're not watching. It'd be pretty weird, though, if I guess you did that. Sportswrap.tv has everything having to do with this show. Go and check it out. We'll have a merchandise store launching there soon as well. All right, without any further delay on this Friday edition of the show, it's time for some odds and ends. A scheduled December 21st matchup between Duke and Michigan is off. Originally, it was supposed to be played at Madison Square Garden in New York. Then they were having issues with broadcast rights deals, so they decided to move the game to Lone Depot Park in Miami. Yes, they were going to play it in a baseball stadium. Basketball teams sometimes do these things outside of the NCAA tournament. So this non-conference matchup right around Christmas time, people are home from school, a lot of eyeballs on the TV. Well, they still had broadcast rights issues. So now there's no Duke-Michigan matchup at all. The two teams will not play each other. Duke instead will take on Texas Tech on December 21st at Madison Square Garden. So we'll obviously see what happens there. And again, it's because Michigan gets carried one place, Duke gets carried another. They couldn't get on the same page in terms of who gets to broadcast the game, so nobody gets the game. The wonders of media in the year 2026. Odds and ends, how about this? Michael Kim shoots the 16th ever sub-60 round in a PGA Tour event. I'd pump my fist too, Michael. And this is one of the truly good guys in all of media when it comes to the PGA Tour. He puts it all out there. He's always on social media. Follow him on X if you don't. You can go and look him up on there. He's a terrific follow. Shoots a 59. He was leading at the time of this. It's no use trying to figure out who's winning now because by the time you see this show, the leaderboard will be updated. But Michael Kim shoots a 69 on Thursday and a 59 on Friday. Congratulations to him and best of luck over the weekend. Yeah, I think he'll be there. Look at the scorecard. Here it is. Look at that scorecard. Shoots a 29 going out and a 30 coming in, including that crazy long birdie for 59. How many guys missed short ones for 59? He made a long one for 59. No bogeys on the scorecard. Amazing stuff. 12 under round of 59 for Michael Kim. Best of luck to him, as I said, over the weekend. It looks like we have seen the last of Diego Pavia. At least it appears that way. The Baltimore Ravens released him before the start of their training camp on Friday. They've still got four quarterbacks on their roster, including, by the way, a kid from Yale. I think it's Justin Fanone. I can't remember his first name, but he was pretty good at Yale. He'll be battling. I think Tyrod Huntley might be still back there. I think Snoop might be there. I don't know. They got a whole bunch of guys on that Ravens roster backing up Lamar Jackson, and that's always an important position when you consider the number of games that he has missed. As for Pavia, I mean, look, he's done a lot of this to himself, not to mention the fact that he's 24 years old coming into the league. And the reality is, he's going to have a very difficult time latching on somewhere. Maybe somebody will give him an opportunity. Maybe there's a team, you know, that's in need of quarterback depth and they give him a shot. He gets on a practice squad and gets to prove himself. I hope he at least gets a shot to latch on with the team and show to some degree what he can do during preseason games. Because despite whatever you might think of his attitude, and it isn't the greatest attitude in the world, he clearly has talent, and we saw it at the collegiate ranks. It's going to do it for us on the show. Thank you to David Ardsma, Brian Twining, and Kurt Heelan, all of you at home for watching. We'll catch you this weekend for Sports Wrap Weekends, or we'll see you back here on Monday. Bye-bye.